Start Basketball.
Hi, this is Gannon Baker, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
You've got to practice leadership. It can't be, I read it in a book and now I'm good to go. I talk about Stebbitt, and I jokingly say Stebbitt's the guy I met on my leadership journey. The S in Stebbitt stands for know yourself. The T means you got to know your team. The E means you got to know your environment. The V, know your vision. The I, know your industry. And then the T, you got to know the truth.
Matt Doherty is a former basketball player and coach at the University of North Carolina. He has extensive experience in leadership and building teams with a winning culture. Matt played his collegiate basketball for the Tar Heels from 1980 to 1984. At UNC, Doherty was a three-year starter. He was just the second player in ACC history to score 1,000 points, grab 400 rebounds, and dish out 400 assists over a collegiate career. In his four seasons, the Tar Heels amassed a record of 117 wins and 21 losses, and won the 1982 NCAA championship as Matt played alongside Michael Jordan, James Worthy, and Sam Perkins. Matt went on to become a Division I head coach, first taking the reins at Notre Dame from 1999 to 2000, before coaching at University of North Carolina from 2000 to 2003, Florida Atlantic from 2005 to 2006, and finally coaching at SMU from 2006 to 2012. As a coach, he won the ACC championship in 2001 with the Tar Heels and was named the AP National Coach of the Year that same season. Doherty went on to work in the front office for the Indiana Pacers of the NBA, before finishing his basketball career as the Associate Commissioner of the Atlantic 10 Conference from 2017 to 2019. Matt is now an active speaker, traveling the country speaking to businesses and organizations, detailing his experience as a player, coach, and executive. Thanks for checking out the Hoopheads podcast. Our lineup of podcast guests includes some of the top minds in the game across all levels, from grassroots to the NBA. They'll share insights to help you grow as a coach, improve as a player, or enhance your experience of the game as a parent. You'll gain new perspectives on what the best coaches are doing, how they do it, and why they do it. We hope to make you think and challenge you to consider your approach to the game of basketball. Please subscribe to the Hoopheads Pod and leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to the show. Help us grow the game by telling your friends and colleagues about the Hoopheads Podcast so they can give us a listen too. Get your pen and paper ready so you can take some notes as you listen to this episode with Matt Doherty, National Championship player at North Carolina, and former head coach at Notre Dame and the University of North Carolina. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel this morning, but we are pleased to be joined by Matt Doherty, former national champion as a college player at the University of North Carolina and former head coach at the University of Notre Dame and the University of North Carolina. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me on, Mike.
We are very excited to be able to have a chance to have a conversation with you.
truth be told, I grew up as a North Carolina fan, despite the fact that I'm here in Cleveland. And my love for Carolina predates actually Michael Jordan. So something about North Carolina. I still remember the 1980 final and Al Wood. That was right around the time when President Reagan was shot, and that was, I think, the first time I really remember becoming a Carolina guy. So despite the fact that didn't grow up in Carolina, I definitely grew up as a North Carolina fan for whatever reason. So
I think it's always there's moments. I think there's a couple of things, you know, I was on that team when Absolutely. Al had 39 points against Virginia in the Final Four. The championship game was two nights later, and that's when Ronald Reagan was shot, and we weren't sure if we were going to play the game. There are moments, you know, there are moments that capture a young man's heart, a young person's heart, and usually it's around 6th, 7th, 8th grade, and you see it, and you just, you know, fascinated by it. And I think also the color of the uniforms.
I agree 100%.
A lot of people, you know, that Carolina blue is pretty cool. So, yeah.
No doubt about that. I was always, as a kid, we used to go on vacation in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. And we would always drive, obviously, through North Carolina to do that. And as a guy who loved North Carolina, I always wanted a Michael Jordan North Carolina jersey. And obviously today you could find it in 2 seconds on the internet. But back then we used to stop and go to department stores in North Carolina, and I was never able to find one. Had lots of gear, but never was able to get that Jordan jersey for whatever reason. So what was it like that night when you guys played Indiana in the title game and Reagan gets shot and you're not sure if the game's going to be played? Do you remember back like what it was like in the locker room, your team, and sort of what Coach Smith was talking to you about in terms of your preparation? Because I had to imagine that was a difficult time to be in the locker room, where here you're preparing for what at that point is obviously the biggest game of your life, and then you're not sure if the game's even going to be played.
I think the game was delayed about an hour. I think finally Ronald Reagan was recovering, and he made some comment that was, you know, hey, play the game. I wish I was there to witness it. And so we went out and played. And unfortunately, we beat pretty handily. Isaiah Thomas was terrific. We had beaten that team, that Indiana team, in Chapel Hill in December. But, you know, Isaiah was terrific. And James Worthy got in foul trouble in the first half. And that, you know, that really hurt our chances.
Well, you got to get back some revenge the next year, not directly with Indiana, but clearly you guys came through in the following season and got Coach Smith his first national championship. Let's go backwards before we go forwards, though, and just talk about you growing up in the state of New York. How did you end up at Carolina? What was the decision-making process for you when you were being recruited? And how did you end up at North Carolina? What was it about the program, Coach Smith? What made you decide to end up in Chapel Hill?
Well, when I was a freshman in high school, Carolina went to the Final Four, and there was this guy named Michael Korn, number 31, who was 6'7", white kid from Jersey City. I'm like, man, that's cool, you know. And here's a kid who's, you know, I'm his height, white kid from New York, New Jersey. He's at North Carolina. Uniforms look cool. I like the way they play. You know, they hustle. They play team basketball. Just coached the Olympics in 1976 in Montreal, where they won the gold medal. And I just kind of fell in love, you know, with the way they played, Michael Korn and their uniforms. And so, you know, I would dream about playing there. And then I was being recruited. I fortunately played on a good high school team. Bob McKillop, who's the head coach at Davidson College, was my high school coach my first 2 years in high school. And we had good teams. So, I mean, you know, some of the better teams in the state of New York. And so I started getting recruited. And then, you know, I wanted to play in a league. The Big East wasn't formed at that time. I was just starting to form when I was a senior in high school. And I really wanted to go and play where I'd get a good education and have a chance to be a part of a great program. And I wanted to play in a league. And the ACC was the best league, you know, in basketball. So I was fortunate that they recruited me. And once they offered, you know, they offered me a scholarship, I saw the place, I decided to commit.
What was your first impressions of Coach Smith when he started recruiting you?
How secure he was with himself, where I think you can sense the anxiety of other coaches, especially when they find out you're being recruited by North Carolina, they get nervous. And it shows in some of the comments they make. And Coach Smith was basically, you know, comfortable. And, hey, we'd love to have you. I remember a comment he made in the home visit, you know, where, you know, most people saying, hey, you have a chance to start or play a lot. And he's sitting there and says, you know, you'll be fortunate to play by the time you're a junior. And I leaned up in my chair and I said to myself, I'll show you. And so, you know, I think that's his way of doing two things, stoking your competitive juices, not over recruiting a player to the point where you're making promises that will cause dissension among the team, make people difficult to coach, and testing you a little bit.
And when you got there as a freshman, what was the biggest adjustment, maybe both on and off the court, for you going from being a high school player to going and stepping into obviously a major college program?
Yeah, I remember going there. I went there for the summer. I always want to get a head start. So I was, now it's common, you know, where freshmen, incoming freshmen go take summer school classes and work out. So I did that. I went down there and got a job. And played pickup games. And I remember the first pickup game. I think Mitch Kupchak, who's now the GM of the Hornets, he was playing for the Washington Bullets at the time. They were called the Bullets. Tommy Lagarde, Dudley Bradley, you know, all these guys were in the NBA. And they're all big, strong, and athletic and aggressive. And I remember my first shot was an air ball. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. And I got a little down. And John Kuster, who ended up coaching in the NBA for a long time, became a friend. And he basically said, it's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And so then you just continue to work. And he kind of took me under his wing. And we would work out on our own and work on my shot and run and do some different drills. And then, you know, I figured it out. You know, you just kind of figure out what you can and can't do. You know, in high school, I could do a lot of things and, you know, leave my feet in the lane and create a shot. Well, that wasn't happening for me at North Carolina, you know. And so by testing yourself against the best, it's going to force you to grow. And I run a leadership practice in I talk about that continually. The only way for you to grow is to get out of your comfort zone. You know, if I just stayed at that level, I would never have gotten better. You know, I thought like, okay, maybe I should consider going to a lower level program where I could be more of the for sure star. But I didn't want to be sitting in my dorm room watching North Carolina cut down the nets.
Yeah, completely understandable. I think the lesson that I pull out of that for sure is that here you were, as most guys are who go to play at an ACC school, you're a high school star, you're a do everything guy in high school. And then you come to a program where it becomes quickly, probably pretty evident that I'm not going to be that same type of all around star. The ball is always in my hands. And yet you were able to figure out how to become a role player, how to fit into what your team needed and what your coaching staff needed for you to do in order for you to get onto the floor. And I think that that's a lesson that is sometimes lost on players today, in that you see the number of kids that are in the transfer portal and just they come into a program with the expectation that they're going to be great right away and they're going to have the ball in their hands constantly. So maybe talk a little bit about just how you adapted to that mentally and just sort of shifted your focus from, hey, I'm going to be this all do everything person to, I've got to figure out what I need to do in order to be able to get on the floor and help my team win.
Well, Mike, I talk a lot to anyone who will listen, and this is a good platform, that I do believe youth basketball is broken because it all is AAU driven and controlled by adults. And now this is the old, when I grew up, okay, this is the old man talking now.
I've been talking like that a lot on the podcast.
Yeah. And I do think if we could instill this model, and I've talked to people, you know, at high levels. See, I was a role player when I was a freshman in high school. I came off the bench. I didn't play a couple of games. My sophomore year, I was, you know, and this is on the varsity. I was the probably third or best player on my, as a sophomore. And as a junior, the best player, senior is the best player on a very good team. In the park growing up, I would go to the park as a sixth grader and try to get into pickup games with the college players. And so I'd be sitting on the sidelines or getting there early. And if I got in a game and I did something wrong, an older player would tell me what to do. And if I didn't do it, I wasn't going to be allowed to play on court one anymore. So my point is, I think that by playing, I always wanted to play up. So I was never the star in the summers or on my high school team, really, until my junior and senior year in high school, because I was playing with really good players. And then in the park, you know, there would be 1 minute, maybe on a Saturday morning, where I was the best player on the court. But Saturday night, the college players would show up, and I had to get there early just to get in the first game. And then I had to take direction from them. And I think that's real talent of leadership. My point is, at a young age, I might 1 minute be the leader of my team on court three, but that night I wanted to be on court one with the college players. So I was the worst player on the starting on the five, and I had to take direction from them. And I think that's where leadership is lost nowadays, is that these young people never pick their own games. They never choose sides. They probably don't even know how to choose, okay? Because the teams are made by adults, and then the plays are designed by the adults. Where when I was in sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, you know, through high school, even college, the two best players would make the teams, and you choose, and then you start negotiating, and then players knew where they stood in the eyes of their peers. Nowadays, a young person has a hard time telling a peer that they're not that, or telling a peer that it's a bad shot, holding a peer accountable, because they don't have to, because the teams are chosen, the coaches run the teams, as opposed to, I think pick up ball is a great way for young people to learn. I'm going to write a book someday about the park, about the valuable lessons you learn from choosing sides, from calling a foul, from telling a young, like if there's 11 people, somebody's not playing. So if you and I are choosing teams, you and I are deciding that person's not good enough. So that person has a choice. He can work to get better. He could go home and quit, or he could just accept it, you know, or he can buy a better ball so that we need him to play because we want to use his ball.
That is so true. I think one of the and I grew up in a very similar fashion to what you just described. A lot of the points that you just made hit home with me. I think about showing up at the park early when I was a young kid so I could get into the games on the main court. And then I would always stick around and be the last guy around. So when there was 8 or 9 or 10 guys left at the end, I could get into that game. And then slowly you start to build your reputation, and you start to figure out, how you can fit in. And I think one of the things that goes along with what you just said is kids today, because of the system that we're in, they only play with kids that are their own age. And so as a result of that, everybody is even. So the situation that you described where you had these college guys when you were younger telling you what you should do or what you needed to do or picking you for their team or not picking you for their team in certain cases helped you to better understand and figure out where you fit and what you needed to work on. Whereas today, just like you described, the coach is there, mom and dad are in the stands, they're playing with other kids who are all their own age. Nobody's the clear leader. There's not that hierarchy. They don't have to make those decisions and figure stuff out and negotiate what the rules are going to be and who's going to be on what team. And I can speak to, you mentioned about kids even knowing how to pick teams. And I can speak to that. I teach phys ed at the elementary level during the day as my quote real job. And picking teams is one of the most difficult things for kids to do because they argue with me. They argue with each other about what the teams are going to be because they just don't have any experience the way that people who grew up in our era had experience of just having to figure stuff out because there wasn't adults around to guide them. And I think that's a huge, huge, I don't know if problem is the right way to say it, but it definitely is something that I think we could improve on and make the youth basketball system better without question.
Imagine if you allowed your kids at PE to choose their own sides and they can only pick five on a side and some kids were left out. You or your principal would get a phone call the next day from that parent whose kid didn't play. And they'd say, how come Johnny didn't play?
Absolutely.
And he'd say, well, he wasn't picked. And they'd say, that's not fair.
Yep.
And I'll say, one of the things I say when I talk on leadership, life's not fair. So, you know, you never want, you know, the old participation trophy. You know, no, like that doesn't work. Like you got to compete. You got to find where you can add value. And if you, because, you know, when you get in the real world, you don't get a paycheck just for showing up.
So true. There's no question about that. And we could probably spend 2 hours talking about youth basketball and the things that we would both have in mind to try to improve it and make it better.
Coaches, we've teamed up with Coach Tyler Whitcomb so you can now purchase his exclusive new playbooks right from the Hoopheads Pod website. If you're looking for ways to improve your team next season, these playbooks blend affordability with the quality content that serious coaches are looking for. Just visit hoopheadspod.com/store and you'll find playbooks from John Calipari of Kentucky, Leonard Hamilton from Florida State, and Mike Young of Virginia Tech. Check out these great resources at hoopheadspod.com/store.
I want to hit on a couple more things with you before we run out of time. So first one is, I think I'd be remiss without asking you, when you're at North Carolina and Michael Jordan shows up, what were your initial impressions of Jordan the first time you met him, saw him, played with him? Did you have any idea? Were there any inklings that he was going to be what he ended up being?
Well, I think the first thing Michael, you see his size and his shoulders and his arms and how long he is and his athleticism. And he, you know, he's very gregarious. He had great energy. He was on the, you know, cocky side, but, you know, he had the talent to back it up. And he didn't mind a challenge. He got stimulated by a challenge. And I followed Jumpman History on Twitter. And you know, there's a quote about Doug Collins saying, you know, don't wake him up. You don't, you let a sleeping dog lie. That's so true. Like when I would play pickup with him, you know, if I had the chance to block his shot, you almost want to apologize and say, you know, I'm sorry, I probably fouled you there, right? Like, because you don't want to fire him up, because once you fire him up, and usually you don't, it doesn't take much. Like, he's right. He's normally high energy. But right. If you would talk any junk or embarrass him in any way, shape, or form, or he would perceive it that way, it was over. It was over. Because he had so much talent, skill, savvy, You know, he was, you know, I think he's the best, you know, maybe Jabbar was overall the best, but, you know, Michael's in the conversation and maybe the best player of all time.
All right. So let's transition from your playing career. I just want to touch a little bit on the coaching side of it. At what point during your playing career did you ever think that you might want to get into coaching? I know you went out and when you got done at Carolina, you ended up getting a job in the quote real world on Wall Street, but was coaching ever on your radar while you were still playing, or was that something that after you were away from the game for a little bit, the bug came back and bit you? Just describe your process for getting into coaching. Yeah. And just what your mindset was.
Well, when I got cut, ironically, I got cut by the Cleveland Cavaliers, George Karl was coaching. I got drafted in the sixth round. They don't even have three rounds now. They have two. So, you know, my chances were very slim. And so when I got cut, I equate it to like getting broke, a longtime girlfriend breaking up with you. You know, as a fourth grader, I dreamt about playing in the NBA. And now the game is telling me it no longer loves me. So I ran to Wall Street. I thought, well, I'll show you, you know, I'm going to go out with this other girl, you know. And so just that other girl wasn't that fulfilling. So I left Wall Street after 4 years, moved to Charlotte thinking I was going to get in the real estate business because I figured money would be fulfilling. And, you know, I wasn't making enough to realize that whether what would or not. But I ended up, I was doing the radio at Davidson. They made a coaching change and hired Bob McKillop. And Bob was my high school coach my first 2 years in high school. And I joined his staff and I never looked back. I mean, I was so in love with coaching basketball and recruited that, you know, it was a perfect fit.
What was that like in terms of going from playing under Coach McKillop and obviously knowing him in that role where you were a player and he's your coach? And then now clearly this is years later, but still going from being in that role to then being a member of his staff and being more of a colleague, what was the relationship like between the two of you at that time?
It was good. I mean, we had a lot of fun. We worked hard. I think that, you know, looking back, and I've told him this, I said, I wish I was a better assistant for him. And I think that, you know, that's why the leadership thing is so important to me. After I got let go at North Carolina, I went on a leadership journey. And, you know, in the middle of my journey, I'm saying, you know, why isn't there any formal leadership development in coaching? There's very little. And so because it's all about leadership for him as a high school coach, now running a college program, for me now being an assistant coach. And, you know, all that gets involved in that, the personalities, the knowledge gaps, the, you know, the clicks, the insecurities, all those things surface and it caused some tension. And then I think Bob really figured out the college game and who he was as a coach and developed to, I think, one of the best coaches in college basketball. You know, making a jump from high school to college is really ridiculous.
It is, no question.
Yeah. And it's not so much it is the basketball to some degree, but it's all the other stuff too. And then I didn't know how to be an assistant. You know, I had an ego, you know, and I was ignorant towards a lot of things. And I was probably disrespectful in my body language to some things. And, so there was a lot of undertones that weren't healthy. And then I went to Kansas. And after I became a head coach, you know, it's like being a parent, right? You kind of realize, oh, my gosh, you know, my dad was a lot smarter than I gave him credit for, you know, or I wish I would have. Bob calls them coaching scars, you know, and there are coaching scars you have dealing with players. But there's also coaching scars you have dealing with staff. And, you know, I look back and I wish I would have been a better assistant for him. And when I said, well, Bob's like a brother to me. Matter of fact, I need to call him. I remember I remember after I lost my job at North Carolina, I moved back to this area near Davidson, and I'd go watch practice. And there was a moment where he and I were leaving the gym, and I said, "Bob, I just want to tell you, I wish I was a better coach assistant for you." And, you know, sometimes you say those things hoping that that other person would fill the dead air and say, "Oh no, you were fine. You know, you're just young." He just looked at me and said, "Thank you."
That's awesome. That's good stuff.
Yeah. True story.
That's yeah. Funny. That's awesome.
He didn't put his arm around me and say, "Oh no, he didn't forgive me." He was just like, "Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it." Another like, "Yeah, you're right. You were kind of a, you know, you're kind of a jerk for 3 years."
All right. Two questions to kind of wrap things up, because I know we're pushing up against your time limit. First thing is, what was the biggest transition when you went from being an assistant to being a head coach? And then number two, just give people an idea of what you're doing on the leadership front, so people have a solid understanding of what you're actually doing today.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. I think, well, you're never ready. You're never fully ready, because you just don't know what you don't know. And a lot of it is the feeling you get in your gut when you transition to that different position as the head coach, because now you have a responsibility for, you know, in college basketball, let's say 30 direct reports, you know, 15 players, four managers, four assistant coaches, a couple of secretaries, strength coach, trainer, whatever. So you now have accountability to them, that you've got to manage them and put them in position to be successful, and then deal with, you know, some insecurities like, oh, you know, paranoia, are they talking about me, or, you know, oh, I screwed that up, feeling of incompetence when you make a mistake, because you will make a mistake. And so I think firing people, you know, those are things you'd never had to do. The
right.
First time I had to fire somebody, I'm writing a book right now, the title will be, as of today, Rebound, because rebounding from failure. And the first time I had to fire somebody was when I was at Notre Dame. You know, that's not easy to do. And there's a right way and a wrong way. And if you do something the wrong way, that could impact your reputation for a long, long time. So as a result, when I lost my job at North Carolina, I worked with an executive coach. I ended up going to the Darden School to take a class at UVA. I went to the Wharton School at Penn, took another class, worked with another executive coach. And as I'm taking some classes at Wharton, I'm saying to myself, oh my God, if I would have taken these classes before I was head coach, I might still be the head coach. And so that's why I realized I want to put together a leadership practice where I teach people, groups, individuals, do seminars on leadership, on how to grow, how to get better, because I realize it's not taught. Even in some of the better corporations, it's not taught. They might have a seminar, they might have a weekend workshop where they check a box, but I call it a leadership practice. Okay, it's the Daugherty leadership practice. And why is it practice? Because you've got to practice. You've got to practice leadership. It can't be, I read it in a book and now I'm good to go. It would be like you taking your team. And I say this, it'd be like me taking my team at North Carolina on October 15th, back when that was the first day of practice, putting in my offense, putting in my defense, talking a little bit about Duke. We're going to, next time I'll see you, we'll meet February 3rd in Durham. We're going to play Duke. How do you think we'll do? Not very good, because we didn't practice. You know, we didn't test our skills. We didn't put, and you will make mistakes as a leader. There'll be those coaching scars where you'll screw up. You'll react to somebody. You'll make a comment, and it could damage a relationship. So I think I talk about Stebbit, and I jokingly say Stebbit's the guy I met on my leadership journey. And the S in Stebbit stands for know yourself. The T means you got to know your team. The E means you got to know your environment. The V, know your vision. The I, know your industry. And then the T, you've got to know the truth. You've got to mine for the truth. So you need to have somebody on your staff that can close the door after practice and say, "Mike, you screwed up. I can't believe you called out Joey when he, you know, got beat off the dribble like that. You know, we put him in a bad position. He shouldn't be, you know, whatever it is, but you embarrassed the kid." And I was, you know, that kind of thing. You're like, damn, you're right. As opposed to creating a wall as a head coach, because now you have the power of the position and you don't listen. You don't create an environment where people can come to you with the truth. Because I say this, either you're going to manage the truth or the truth is going to manage you. Yeah. So those are the things that I learned and I talk a lot about in my leadership practice. And I've enjoyed that because that's my fix, Mike, of teaching and coaching since I don't have a basketball team anymore.
I love it. It's good stuff, Matt. I really enjoyed your clinic at the Virtual Coaches Clinic. I thought it was well done. And I thought a lot of the things that you shared really were relevant to coaches today. And that's another reason why I wanted to have you on, besides obviously your background as both a player and a coach. Want to be respectful of your time. Before we get out, can you just give people an idea of where they can find out more about what you're doing, share out how they can find out just how they can get in contact with you, and then I'll jump back on and wrap up the episode.
Yeah. You know what? I'm under, my website is under construction. They can find me on Twitter at Doherty Matt, D-O-H-E-R-T-Y Matt, and then coachmattdoherty.com.
Awesome. That's very cool. So people who are part of our audience, please reach out and go find the things that Matt's doing. I think he's going to have some great stuff up there. That's going to be an excellent resource for coaches in terms of leadership. So to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Head Start Basketball, along with members of the Jay Billis Skills Camp staff, will be hosting the very first Prime Skills Camp, an affiliate of the Jay Billis Skills Camp that is held annually in Charlotte, North Carolina. Prime Skills Camp will take place on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, June 26th through the 28th. And will be designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9. Prime Skills Camp will mirror the Jay Billis Skills Camp in daily programming, teaching, coach-to-camper ratio, and quality of instruction. Prime Skills Camp brings all of the team-oriented individual instruction, focus on the fundamentals, and high-level coaching to young men aspiring to a high school varsity basketball experience. This camp is operated by Billis Camp veterans and includes the Jay Billis Coaches Development Program alongside the camp, ensuring that the quality of teaching and coaching at this camp is second to none. Please visit headstartbasketball.com or jbillescamp.com for more information or to get registered. Registration is now open at headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps for boys and girls in grades 1 through 6 throughout the greater Cleveland area. Get registered today and make sure you hit the courts with us this summer.
Hey everyone, last year at the Junior NBA Summit, I came across an amazing company called iSport 360 and its founder, Ian Goldberg. Their youth sports app gets coaches, players, and parents on the same page. Your team can set goals, share player feedback, training videos, sticker rewards, player evals, and practice assignments. All of this to foster a healthy team communication and culture. If your team or club struggles to keep open lines of communication, especially among team parents, iSport 360 can help. If you want to empower your athletes to have more success, more confidence, and more communication with their teammates, give iSport 360 a try today. Shoot me an email, mike@hoopheadspod.com, or give me a call at 216-392-4059 to learn more.
Being without basketball right now is tough for all of us, so we've partnered with Pro Skills Basketball to offer you a 50% discount on their Ultimate Shooting Guide and Video Program that will put players on a guided path to becoming the best shooter they can be. With 1 year's worth of workouts that includes games, drills, and competitions, players will gain access to a blueprint showing them what it takes to become an elite-level shooter. If you're looking to improve your shooting at home, this program can help. Visit hoopheadspod.com/store to to check it out.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.